Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Wednesday, March 26, 2014. Is Obama channeling Tricky Dick Nixon on the NSA?
Good evening, my fellow Americans. At our convention, Miami, FLA. A campaign across the USA. Let me make this perfectly clear. Let me stick it in your ear. They said, hey, babe. Make a date with the Watergate. My fellow Americans, I said, hey, honey, make a date with the Watergate. And Martha Mitchell says, do.
That's my old DJ buddy, John Records Landecker from Chicago, impersonating Richard Nixon to the music track provided by Lou Reed. And it takes us back to the Watergate era. And I started my radio career when Nixon was president. Watergate was the focal point of a show I did in Chicago, and I surprised the management because the combination of my talent and the Watergate scandal took us to the top of the ratings, and the management called me and said, what the hell are you doing? But one of my vivid memories of Nixon and Watergate was when he called a news conference after the White House taping system had been revealed. And he had transcripts made from selective tapes. And even those transcripts were heavily redacted. And he had them all printed up, and they put them in binders, and they arrayed these dozens of binders behind him on a desk as he went on television to announce, here it is, the full story of Watergate. And at the time, we had an adversarial press that approached the president's claim skeptically. And 2 years later, because of the digging of people like Woodward and Bernstein and the New York Times, we knew that Nixon had lied, that it wasn't the full story of Watergate arrayed in those binders behind him. And the phrase that stuck was the so-called limited hangout route. That's where Nixon produced a little bit of evidence, said, this is the full story, now go away. And at the time, because we had some real journalists in our media, the story didn't go away, and Nixon was forced to resign in disgrace as he faced impeachment. Fast forward to this week. President Obama spent the last few days in the Netherlands, and he did make some comments there for consumption in the U.S. media about the plan that was introduced by the White House to put some limits on the NSA's collection and control of our metadata telephone records. As you know, that's millions of bits of data on millions of innocent Americans. And I believe that this single modest reform is being served up as a limited hangout by Barack Obama. He wants the media and the people to focus on this. And it's the beginning and end of reform of the massive violations of our constitutional rights that have been occurring under this president. Forget the history. Obama inherited this when he took office in 2009, and he could have shut it down. But he allowed it to continue. He enabled the NSA and 16 other intelligence arms of our government to continue the work that had been done. And if anything, Obama and his minions have expanded the legal footing for the illegal activities that continue to take place. So the White House announces that, we got this proposal. We'll let the phone companies keep the records, and we'll require that the government go to the FISA court, get an explicit warrant for each wiretap or phone data collection effort they want to make. Sounds good, right? Now, I'm certainly not opposed to this, but it barely scratches the surface. And the spin that I have seen in the corporate media riles me. I'm slow to anger, folks, but it just steams me. All right, Exhibit A, my San Francisco Chronicle. The headline of their editorial reads, Obama gives ground on NSA snooping. The first line reads, President Obama wants to throttle back one of this country's most excessive and unwarranted invasions of privacy by limiting the amount of phone data that spy agencies can store and examine. His steps have the potential to ensure national security without the need to peer into everyday lives. They don't bother to mention that it is the pressure that has come from Ed Snowden's disclosures. And loudmouths like me, I'm not taking any personal credit, but there are people across the country who are offended, who are outraged by this unconstitutional activity by our government. That's why Obama is doing this. And he'll admit it in the quotes. He says, well, we need to restore trust. Well, if you want to restore trust, just stop spying. Instead, they want to maintain PRISM and Mystic. That's the one where they can record 100% of the phone calls of a given country. And we're not hearing any shouts, even from the rafters, except from yahoos like me, that this is a pittance, a very modest step. Now, Ed Snowden from Moscow chimes in and says, well, this is a turning point. He says, the very first open and adversarial court to ever judge these programs has now declared them Orwellian and likely unconstitutional. In the USA Freedom Act, Snowden continues, Congress is considering historic, albeit incomplete, reforms. You got that right, Ed. And President Obama has now confirmed that these mass surveillance programs kept secret from the public and defended out of reflex rather than reason are in fact unnecessary and should be ended. More from Snowden. This is a turning point, and it marks the beginning of a new effort to reclaim our rights from the NSA and restore the public seat at the table of government. Now, he prefers to see the glass 20% full, maybe 10% if I'm generous. And while I note that they put a little water in the glass, to me it's still 80, 90% empty. And here's another example of the spin that corporate media outlets put on this initiative from the Obama White House. As you may know, I force myself every evening to watch the PBS NewsHour. It doesn't have ads. It has underwriting messages from Goldman Sachs and Warren Buffett's BNSF Railroad. More recently, the defense and intelligence contractor BAE Systems. And we recently learned that the majority ownership of the PBS NewsHour is controlled by John Malone, the conservative media magnate. Nonetheless, the NewsHour gives me my periscope view to inside the Beltway thinking as they trot out a series of white male talking heads, occasionally a female. But they stay very much inside the lines. And the PBS NewsHour, in its news summary, said that the president is reining in the NSA. And here's how anchor Gwen Ifill opened their interview segment about this proposal from the White House.
We return now to the president's proposal to limit the NSA's ability to gather telephone information on Americans.
Now, this whole thing, if you notice, portrays Obama as a bystander. That the NSA did this, then only because of Ed Snowden he found out about it, and now he's working to limit the scope of the NSA. That's not really true, friends.
Intelligence agencies and Congress prepared to debate that balance between privacy and security. We turn to Gary Schmidt, staff director of the...
Now, another false notion here and a false premise here, that they're debating the balance between security and privacy. There's no security benefit to the metadata program. They can't point to a single case where it's helped them bust up some alleged terrorist plot. But that's the frame that the corporate media uses to describe this. So now she's going to introduce former spook Gary Schmidt or Schnitt.
Senate Intelligence Committee and executive director of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board under Ronald Reagan, and Kate Martin, director of the Center for National Security Studies, a civil liberties advocacy group. How big a concession was it for the president? We're going to hear the details later this week, no doubt. Kate Martin, to decide to rein in this bulk collection program.
Well, so here you hear the question framed as reining in the bulk collection program. Limited hangout. They've narrowed the focus just to this one program. And this is presented as the fix to all of the violations that have occurred in terms of domestic spying.
It's a significant step. It's the president saying to his intelligence community, you haven't made the case that you need this authority, and I'm going to limit it. So it's an important...
I also think that Kate Martin was a really weak proponent of the constitutionalist point of view. And here she repeats the frame that, you know, we're reining this in and that it the issue is that it didn't have any utility. What about the constitutional question? Well, they skirt that as much as they can. And wait till you hear this guy Schmidt come up.
Important recognition. You know, he did it after two separate outside reviews, which said that this particular authority wasn't needed and hadn't actually been effective in doing anything.
Gary Schmidt, a significant step or going too far?
Definitely a significant step. I mean, remember when the president made a speech about a month or so ago, he called the program important. He said that nobody had broken any laws and that it was an important tool for counterterrorism.
So the president, the president is switching his position. He defended this program and he tried to mollify the American public by saying, well, you know, we're not listening to your calls. We're just looking at the data, and you already give that to the phone company. So what's the big whoop? But this guy Schmidt also inserted that the president said no laws have been broken. Well, that's an assertion. That's not a finding. That's not a judgment. Laws have been broken. There's no question about it. And so to focus on whether or not this provided practical benefits to the spy agencies, again, misdirects the viewer away from the constitutional and legal questions.
Well, but what's important about the change is that at the moment, or what the NSA has been doing, is collecting all of the call records on everyone. And what the president has said is... But what's important about the change, and the phone companies holding the data just means the phone companies have data on their customers, right? But what the review group that the president set up said was that the NSA having this massive database on Americans' phone calls posed risks to democratic governance, which were not necessary or justified by any national security benefit from that kind of database. And so the president said, we're not going to have that database anymore.
But ultimately,
as you can see, Kate Martin is rationalizing that this can be dispensed with because not because it's a constitutional violation, but because it didn't produce any useful intelligence. Well, I acknowledge that it is practically useless, but we know that it provides the index for the recorded phone calls under the MYSTIC program. We don't have confirmation yet that MYSTIC was deployed in the United States, but we have strong suspicions about that. And so this, again, skirts the central issues of the need for true reform of our intelligence practices, particularly in the United States, and it's a way of enabling the continuation of 98% of the status quo. Today, a couple of people who I have great respect for, actually three of them, Norman Solomon, Ray McGovern, and Colleen Rowley, held a news conference and then delivered 100,000 petitions to the U.S. Justice Department after the State Department refused to accept them. These are signatures to petitions. calling on the government to restore the passport that was put on hold that Ed Snowden has, that would permit him to travel from Moscow to some other country, and to make an effort to bring people like Ed Snowden to testify along with other whistleblowers so that we can have real reform of our renegade intelligence community. And I want to thank Norman Solomon, Ray McGovern, and Colleen Rowley for this effort, because I think it is extremely important to demand that our government stop persecuting Snowden for being a whistleblower. And after Ray McGovern tweaked former NSA and CIA director Michael Hayden, Hayden was quoted by the trade publication Government Executive. Asked whether Snowden's passport should be reinstated, Hayden said, "Well, for the purpose of returning to the United States to stand trial, I would be fully supportive." So these are efforts that people are taking to try to restore constitutional rule in the United States. And I'm glad they're doing it, and I support what they're doing. On her MSNBC program last night, Rachel Maddow did another good job of expanding the reporting and our knowledge on the FBI killing of Ibrahim Todashev in Orlando last May. Maddow produced pictures that were supplied in the report by the state prosecutor in Florida, and also revealed that, you know, there was an FBI agent and two Massachusetts state police officers who conducted this five-hour interrogation of Todashev. They claim, and of course we have no way to independently confirm the official leaks that they've given, but they claim that this guy was signing a confession when he flipped out, flipped over a table that knocked over the FBI agent. We still don't know who the guy is. And when he got up from the floor, he pulled his service revolver, and as Todashev was apparently running after him with a pole, again, these are accounts supplied only by the government, he started shooting. And I think that Maddow did an excellent job, and if you haven't seen it, go to her website, rachel.msnbc.com, and look for her report on the Todashev killing from Tuesday, March 25th. Because one of the interesting things she points out is the timeline shortly before Todashev was killed. They had completed the interrogation, and they had three different recording devices. They were all turned off. One of them was the smartphone of one of the Massachusetts state troopers. And he stopped recording Todashev so that he could make text messages, send text messages to fellow officers, presumably back in Massachusetts. And he was bragging about how they had gotten Todashev to admit. And he twice texted the phrase, "Who's your daddy?" The final "Who's your daddy?" was just a minute or two before the shooting broke out. And one of the reasons that they may have been off guard, were told that the FBI agent was distracted and that the third Massachusetts cop had left the apartment. They let their guard down. They knew that Todashev was a martial arts fighter. They were afraid of him. He had a sword on a wall. They took the sword down and hid it. And we will never know. We'll never have a credible source of information about what happened in that Orlando apartment that night. But keep in mind that the FBI has had complete control of this narrative since the shooting last May. And despite that, the story has shifted time and again, and it shifted again in the reports of this state investigation. And one more tidbit from Maddow. The FBI agent who did the shooting, we still don't know his name, has never been interviewed by investigators of this crime. He submitted a written statement. but from everything we know, was not interviewed by the Justice Department investigators, and it was flatly reported by the Florida prosecutor that he did not interview the FBI agent who fired the shots. Now that is a hell of an investigation, isn't it? Every day I like to pause to thank the people who support this program through their subscriptions. And I want to single out Paul L. Sesser, a guy who, like clockwork, every month drops a check in the mail. He doesn't like PayPal, so he prefers to just mail in a check when he pays his bills every month. And I'd like you to join those ranks. As I've mentioned, I don't know exactly why. People cancel. They don't send me an email to say, oh, Peter, I don't have time, or I'm out of money, or I think you're full of it. Any of those are possible. But the fact is that recently some people have canceled and not so many people have signed up. And that affects my cash flow and my ability to continue to producing a daily podcast here. So I hope you'll step up. Go to peterbcollins.com. Follow the link under my picture that says sign up. Choose $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever fits your budget. Or our best deal, the $50 annual subscription. New annual subscribers get the rockin' CD from John Dist called Red Flag and a bag of kick-ass Kona coffee beans supplied by Russ Archibald on the Big Island of Hawaii. And the other way you can support us is by taking the offer for a free one-month trial at audible.com. When you sign up, they'll give you your first audiobook download free. You can cancel before 30 days, won't have to pay them a penny. But just for trying it out, they'll pay me $15 for referring you. Follow the link from the banner ad at peterbcollins.com. Well, here we have a victory for Americans of sorts. And that is the son-in-law of Osama bin Laden, Suleiman Abu Ghaith, has been convicted in a New York City federal courtroom. The victory is that he was tried before a civilian court instead of a kangaroo court tribunal at Guantanamo or elsewhere. The victory includes that he will not be sent to Guantanamo and was not held there prior to trial. Now, I'm not convinced that he deserves the three counts he was convicted on, particularly the one called conspiracy to kill Americans. Because from the testimony and evidence I've seen, Abu Ghaith was a mouthpiece. He did make comments against the United States, threatening us with further violence after 9/11. But the testimony that was not heard by the court, submitted by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, told us that Abu Ghaith had no involvement in the plotting of any kind of military or terrorist activities by Al-Qaeda. Now, I'm not trying to confer First Amendment speech rights on Abu Ghaith. But if he were an American citizen, there would be a serious question about whether his statements would be protected by our First Amendment. So in addition to the conspiracy to kill Americans charge, he was convicted for providing material support to terrorists and conspiring to provide material support to terrorists. So it'll be interesting to see what sentence he draws and where they confine him. But at least from the point of view of the American system and the perversions that it has been subject to in the last 12 years, there's a sense of relief that this trial was conducted in the manner it was. Well, being on Barack Obama's Secret Service detail means you get to travel to far-flung locations, drink too much, maybe get laid. Well, it's happened again. A Secret Service agent who was reportedly found by hotel staff in a drunken stupor in a hallway of an Amsterdam hotel was sent home along with two agents who were told should have turned him in, should have reported him, but didn't. And of course, this isn't the first time in Cartagena, Colombia, April 2012, 13 agents and officers were accused of carousing with female foreign nationals, hookers, And that episode only surfaced because one of the guys tried to shortchange the hooker. Likewise, Amsterdam is a red light town. They have a red light district. You can find a girl and pay her for some fun. And it's a party town where you can get weed in the cafes and drink as much as you want. I love Amsterdam. It's a very nice city. But despite the appointment of a new leader of the Secret Service and a female, these hijinks continue. I want to be very clear that the report I'm about to reference comes from Russian news agency The Voice of Russia, formerly known as TASS. But I think we deserve to know what Russia is reporting about developments in Ukraine. And here in the West, all we hear about is the hundreds of thousands of Russian troops who were doing maneuvers but have stayed in the area right along the eastern border of Ukraine with Russia. So the Voice of Russia reports that a private military company will be in charge of suppressing protest movements in eastern Ukraine. Now, that's kind of loaded because, of course, Putin has suppressed a lot of protests himself. And those who are protesting the Russian annexation of Crimea, who are not in Crimea but are north of it in those eastern portions of Ukraine, it's not clear to me whether those are orchestrated protests or freestanding. But what they are reporting is that oligarchs who have been appointed governors in the regions that border Russia have decided to hire mercenaries from the United States, engaging a company called Greystone Limited, which according to TASS, and I have not done any additional research, so don't take this as fact, is an offshoot of Akademai, which is the renamed Blackwater Group. And we know the history of Blackwater providing mercenaries for security operations in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. And so I think it's worth noting that Russia believes that American mercenaries are serving or will be soon in eastern Ukraine. I think I mentioned this briefly last week. I learned about it first from Daily Kos. But the Washington Post confirms today that the farm bill that took 5 years to jam through the Congress or get through the Congress, and that included $8.5 billion worth of cuts to food stamp benefits, that state governors have found a way to use a loophole in the law to restore full food stamp benefits to thousands of low-income families. And this is a hoot. It really is, because John Boehner has gone from orange to red, and he's outraged at this cheating and this fraud. Have another Merlot, John. That'll make it better. So in at least 8 states, governors found a loophole in the law, and basically, it says that if you are poor enough that you qualify for home heating assistance and for food stamps, that they can restore the food stamp cuts that were imposed by Congress by making minor adjustments in the amount of heating oil subsidies the same people get. So, for example, governors have found that by increasing by only $19 a month the amount of home heating oil subsidy that goes to a family in poverty, that the law permits them to restore food stamp cuts of $29 to $36 per month. So, I think it shows that in Congress, they don't always read the bills that they pass, and that John Boehner doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. So, the windfall that states receive from the government greatly outweighs the costs in heating aid. In Oregon, the state will spend $2 million of federal money it was already receiving on additional heating assistance to make about 100,000 residents eligible for more food aid. And they'll get $56 million in food stamps. Well, we'll see what the Republicans try to do about that. Finally, today here in California, we have another Democrat, another sitting member of the state Senate, who has been arrested on corruption charges. And he's the Asian American senator from San Francisco, Leland Yee. I've known Leland since he first ran for the legislature. He was on the school board here in San Francisco. He served in the lower house, the assembly, and then when term limits hit him, he moved up to the state Senate. He's facing term limits this year and has announced that he's running for Secretary of State. Only something is intervening. This morning, hundreds of agents from the FBI, the IRS, and local police raided a number of locations and arrested Leland Yee and took him into custody. Now, the details are still sketchy, but we're told that the case stems from a fatal shooting, a murder, about 5 years ago, and involves a member of the Asian underworld named Raymond Shrimp Boy Chow. So this is a very serious, the FBI just didn't say, hey, we're investigating you, can we have some documents? They took this guy into custody, and they grabbed the documents at his office in Sacramento, office in San Francisco, a home, and several other locations. Now, I've reported to you previously that State Senator Rod Wright was convicted of voter fraud at the end of January. He's technically on leave from the State Senate, but continues to draw his salary. State Senator Ron Calderon from Southern California has been indicted on a number of counts of fraud and bribery. He continues to serve and draw his paycheck while he is on a leave of absence. We got a serious problem with corrupt Democrats in the legislature in Sacramento. And so far, the leader of the state Senate, who I have a pretty high regard for, Daryl Steinberg, has been very slow to move out these people. Rod Wright was convicted, and they didn't make any effort to expel him. Then Calderon was indicted. Steinberg took a tougher line on him, but ultimately Calderon did not resign, and they haven't tried to eject him. And now a third Democrat, arrested in a murder investigation. I'm really sorry to see this because, from my point of view, one-party rule in Sacramento has been good because we had 7 or 8 years, most of that time under Schwarzenegger, when the Republicans, who were loyal to Grover Norquist, would not allow any legislation to move that could in any way raise taxes. And the state was broke, and Jerry Brown had to come back into the governorship, was able to cobble together tax increases that have returned the state to solvency. And the Democrats in control of the legislature did not overreach with their supermajorities in both houses. But they recently killed an ethics measure that would have provided some transparency. And Leland Yee was front and center in an effort recently to kill some legislation that would attempt to place a ballot measure to modify the voters' ban on affirmative action that was passed in the 1990s. As I mentioned about that, that pitted the Asian Americans against the African Americans, and the Asian Americans, who have generated an advantage in terms of admissions to the University of California since affirmative action was eliminated, they prevailed. And there was some ugly backroom wheeling and dealing by Leland Yee, the state senator now in custody. Thanks for joining me for news and comment today. This podcast is free, and you are free to share it with absolutely anyone. I hope you will.
Happy trails to you. until we meet again. Happy trails.